Penguin Random House Audio presents The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man, a Memoir by Paul Newman. Edited by David Rosenthal. Foreword by Melissa Newman. Afterword by Clea Newman Soderlund. Note to listeners, this audiobook includes a downloadable PDF containing photographs from the printed book. This book is dedicated to Stuart Henry Stern, March 22, 1922, to February 2, 2015. Success is what determines the difference between vision and irresponsibility. If I had to define Newman in the dictionary, I'd say, one who tries too hard. Paul Newman, Unpublished Interviews, 1991.
Foreword. In September of 1986, the year he embarked on this project, an article in the New York Times described Paul Newman as a lean 5'11". A gossip columnist in the New York Post countered that anyone who has met Paul face-to-face says he has never hit 5'11" except in heels, and offered a challenge. $1,000 to Newman's favorite charity or political candidate for every inch he measures over 5'8", barefoot. Relishing the opportunity to stick it to Page Six, our dad matched it, upped the ante times 100, and purchased some inversion boots so he could hang upside down for good measure. To our knowledge, the challenge was dropped. In 1986, we can say with reasonable certainty, he measured a solid 5'10". Both papers were wrong. He had integrity. He also had an abiding preference for privacy and always felt awkward in interviews. The fact that our father ever considered the book seems completely weird to us, but he did keep at it for 5 years. An offering to the offspring is how he originally thought of it. That, and maybe a way to set the public record straight after being dogged most of his life by the tabloids. Part confessional, part self-analysis. It's full of the kinds of revelations that, had they been shared with us sooner, might have made for some deeply meaningful conversations about relationships, identity, luck, and art, and most likely some pretty uncomfortable family dinners. He decided the only possible choice of collaborator would be Stuart Stern, a dear friend, faithful keeper of family secrets, and a breathtaking writer. Probably best known for his screenplay of Rebel Without a Cause, he had also penned multiple screenplays for projects that involved both Paul and his second wife, Joanne. Stuart's adoration of both of them, their collective children and their children's children, made him the kind of adopted relative who intertwined blissfully with the family DNA. Starting in 1986, he threw himself into this new project, passing along the subject's insistence that all the interviewees be as bluntly truthful as they could manage. Close friends and relatives were hired to transcribe. By 1991, however, he and our father seemed to have completely overwhelmed themselves out of it. They were up to their eyeballs in material. Not much was said after that. After a year's illness, and almost 1 year exactly from his final win at Lime Rock Racetrack, our father passed away in 2008. He was 83. For us, for what seemed an eternity, the world stopped. There was the inevitable confusion and chaos to be dealt with, and the fog of grief. Nearly a decade crawled by. Once in a while, the topic of the transcripts would come up. Details were hazy. There had been rumors of a bonfire. Stuart, who at 92 was now coming to the end of his own life journey, was desperate to know what happened to them. He wanted them archived, at least for posterity. Before the mystery could be solved, he was gone. We assume the transcripts were floating around somewhere, or perhaps not. We wanted to see them. Or did we, really? In 2019, we stumbled upon some ancillary interviews in locked file cabinets that had migrated to the damp basement of the family house in Connecticut. Sometime later, our friend, producer Emily Wachtel, found the entirety of our father's transcripts as she was archiving a family storage unit. A cursory peek turned into a year-long reading project, and what was revealed felt raw and personal. 14,000 pages in, she suggested it might be interesting to try to finish what was started. You can read about private jets and red carpets elsewhere. This is definitely not that. Instead, it's sort of a self-dissection, a picking apart of feelings, motives, and motivations, augmented by a Greek chorus of other voices and opinions, relatives, Navy buddies, and fellow artists. One overriding theme is the chronic insecurity which will be familiar to so many artists. Objectivity is fickle. It's difficult for some people to understand, given all that success, how that sense of doubt could be so relentless. Here was someone who suspected himself an imposter, an ordinary man with an extraordinary face and luck on his side, achieving far beyond what he'd set out to do. He always felt it was tenacity, not talent, that saw him through. There were some who dismissed him, but luckily, there were also plenty who recognized something remarkable in him long before he did. And finally, there's the public fairy tale of two Hollywood stars and their blissfully uncomplicated 50-year marriage, which, besides being bogus, seems unfair to anyone, famous or not, who has ever committed to a romantic relationship. Acknowledge that there were two families, half-siblings, and other collateral damage, and suddenly the story becomes far more relatable. The mood in the house was unstable, stormy one minute, joyous the next. The truth ultimately gives more credit to the flesh-and-blood couple who weathered all of that drama and betrayal and came out on the other side, battle-scarred, but still inexorably intertwined. It's a cliche for fathers of a certain vintage to be distant or unknowable. Ours was the inevitable sequel to his own frustrated father and all the preceding generations that flailed away at parenting with little or no guidance. This book looks backward from a moment in time. To his lasting credit, our father continued to evolve after these interviews were conducted, contributing some of the best of himself, emotionally, artistically, and altruistically, all the way to the end. To suddenly have at our fingertips this encyclopedia of his thoughts and motivations, his conflicts, his context, has been, shall we say, deep. That he speaks about wanting us to know everything is beyond moving. Melissa Newman.
Introduction. Let's see if we can write a first chapter, then try that with a second chapter, then a third, then a fourth, and a fifth. Let's see now. We've got that covered. We've got this covered. We've got the attitude down, the creation, the drinking, and all of the humor, and whatever the morality is. The most ironic thing of all is that one could say at the beginning, like writers do in some biographies, this is the boy who accomplished this and then that, and then grew up to be the prime minister. And now we'll go back and look at the details of how that happened. But it turns out that this book is just the story of a little boy who became a decoration for his mother, a decoration for her house, admired for his decorative nature. If he had been an ugly child, his mother would not have given him the time of day. If he had had a limp or an eyelid that drooped, and she stopped to comfort that small invalid beside her, it would have been to satisfy her own sense of needing to comfort something, but nothing actually to do with the boy. And the boy became so offended by the artificiality of it, and the fact that it did not relate or connect to him in any way, that the core of this kid finally said, "Jesus Christ, take it. It's yours. I'm going to save what's left of me over here." Then the boy with the decoration just ran away with the football. He was getting everything. He was eating and living well, and he was leaving.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?